was, oh, I bet it's going to be a 90-10 split. Just to confirm what you said there, it's the same deal as what would have happened back in December?
Yeah, exactly the same deal. So, you know, I think it's fairly established, it's on record. The contract was, you know, if 99% wasn't the right number, 98% is the right number in terms of where we got to on that contract. And the commercial terms, importantly, were agreed and accepted. They're exactly the same deal, exactly the same terms. We got enough time, hopefully this time, to get it done if they want to do it. But look, they made it clear as well in that conversation that they're exploring other opportunities for Joshua, and we've got to still explore other opportunities for Tyson. We can't put all our eggs in one basket, but at the end of the day, the priority is to see if we can make it. If they want to make it, it's there to be done.
But Tyson put out a post last night as well. He took the name from Joshua out of loads of different accounts, and he said, the draft contract has been sent over. I'm not going to bother you too much, but the draft contract's with you. Eddie Hearn's come out this morning and said there is no draft contract. What can you tell us?
Well, I mean, look, Tyson's a boxer. He's not a lawyer. He's not a promoter. And I think that might be him maybe slightly misunderstanding how the approach and how the strategy's got to go down to make big fights. I mean, you start with a formal offer, which we've done. The other party accept that formal offer, which we're hoping they will, or at least engage in discussions to have it happen. If that happens, then we go back to the contract.
Hello, and welcome back to the number one podcast in the sport, where I said we'd bring different voices to the table, and I think we have done so. I can say now this is the first ever outside broadcast. First time I've taken this equipment out of my place. That was an experience. Definitely worth it though. So I made the commitment, if you remember, that I'd try and get more voices, more textures. I'd do less of the talking was what I wanted to say. You know, for these next 100 episodes, I'd do less of the talking. But it's taken me about 7 episodes to get someone else on. So just bear with me. But first outside broadcast. Makes it sound so official. And what I wanted to do was get hold of someone who, to be fair, has been good to me, right? And Alfie Warren's one of those guys who's always been good to me, always shown support publicly and behind the scenes as well. Like, you know, he will sing my praises to people when I'm not even in the room. So if I can also help him and, you know, expose him to people who may not necessarily know who Alfie Warren is, then it's more than worth it. So let's just frame it properly so you guys can understand. So Alfie Warren runs Warren Boxing Management. So there's Alfie, there's Freddie, there's Sonny, and Bobby. So they're all Frank's nephews, okay? And trust me, it's a separate part of the business, as you'll find out in the interview, different family WhatsApp groups. But they run Warren Boxing Management, and you know, they're on the same journey that most managers are. They'd like to build world champions. Got some good fighters. They got Masood Abdullah, good man, good fighter. And he does have the potential to hang at world level, man. I've never seen a kid so dedicated. And they've got other guys. Courtney Bennett fights on WBM shows as well. So Alfie's a guy I know well. We know a lot of the same people. And it was good to actually just sit down, because normally we're at York Hall and we go past each other, or we're at a public workout or weigh-in, and we kind of shoot past each other because we've all got different stuff to do. So it was nice to sit down with Alfie and have a good chat. Like, I think what you'll find is that it's just a good boxing chat. Hopefully it's educational in some ways as well. Apologies to the people not from London. It's quite London-centric, obviously, because we recorded in London. But I still think it's informative and it's interesting. I think Alfie's a good guy, wants to do the right things in the sport, man with a big heart as well. And it'll be interesting to see how that journey goes. Hopefully, I'll remain plugged into that journey as we sort of see it progress, evolve, and grow. So I want to thank Alfie for giving his time. For context, we were scheduled to start recording at 10:30 in the morning. I think we started recording after 1 o'clock, maybe 1:10 in the afternoon. So by the time I got home, I'd left my house at 9:30. I got home at about 4:15. And normally that would frustrate me, but the upside of it is got to bump into a lot of people from my boxing life. And I think I'm going to burn up a lot of time here just speaking about that, because like, boxing's a small world, and the people you kind of bubble up the amateurs with are the people you tend to meet when you get to this stage. So it was lovely to see Hannah Rankin at Times Amateur Boxing Club, and she was doing some of her publicity for her upcoming fight. I think it's in about 3 weeks. So that was really, really good. Like, got a lot of time for Hannah. You know, if you followed the story for long enough, you remember Hannah was one of the guests at our live show. Followed the journey well before that from her gym box days. Hannah and I have also done commentary together on a Dennis Hobson show. And so now to then meet in this context as well, it just shows, do you know what I mean? Like, you always see the same people in boxing. So, look, happy for her. No, it seems to be going well. She's definitely on the hunt for a world title, and I believe she'll get one. And she deserves it, man. Hannah Rankin is a great story for women's boxing. I mean, it's just living proof that determination and drive can get you a long way in life. So really good to see her. Good to see Billy Underwood. I hadn't seen Billy Underwood since, like, the Haringey Box Cup, and he would have been like a teenager back then. So it's lovely to see Billy Underwood. He's up at Times ABC doing his thing. Freddie Warren, saw him, you know, family man now. God, I hadn't seen him for a while, and he's also involved in that. Got to see Sonny Warren, which is also good. So, I mean, got to see the whole Warren clan apart from, I think, Bobby, I didn't get to see. Have to really, really thank Rival Boxing Gym. So Rival Boxing Gym is a gym just by Caledonia Road and Barnsbury Station, opened up by two boxers, Newman Hussein and Amy Andrew. And if you know the amateur scene in London, you'll know Amy. You know, she's a stalwart of the scene. Newman, professional, he's doing his thing as well. Need to see him out this year. And I think Amy tried to do the Olympics with New Zealand as well. So she's kind of done the circuit. And, you know, now she's fighting for the Commonwealth title in a few weeks. I wish her all the best. And the gym they've got is amazing. Fully kitted out in Rival gear. Looks amazing. You know when you walk into a gym and it still smells new? Like, it hasn't been sweated in yet. So that was really, really good. Lovely to see them. Wonderful to see Maz Abdullah. Like, I only ever seem to bump into him during Ramadan, which is a coincidence. But if you want to get behind a boxer, like one of these unsung heroes, almost like a Rocky story, Masood Abdullah is the guy. At featherweight, I think he does a lot of damage to established names. And he won't be far off wanting to terrorize a guy like Nick Ball. Like, you saw what he did to Keish Ashfaq. So, I mean, get behind Maz Abdullah, guy I just got a lot of time for. I think he's got a bright future in this game. Who else? Stevie Broughton. Lovely to see Steve. So Steve is Amy Andrews trainer, training Orion Salungu as well, trains Maz Abdullah. And if you know my story, Steve Broughton is the reason I got in with Shane McGuigan way back when, in the mists of time. So I'll always have a lot of respect for Steve, because, you know what I mean, he was important in that process. And I've loved seeing his journey, because I remember when people in boxing were slating him, going, we don't know who he is. How dare he come into our sport and think he knows better than us? But now you see him, he's got Maz, he's got Amy Andrew. I'm going to forget all the people. You've got Orion, he had Big Steph before, he's got Joe Joyce. And he's building a training team around him now. And so watching all of this growth, I love, because we all kind of came up together. We're all from that same era. And just forever grateful for that. Just a really, really, really good experience. And I'm sure I've forgotten people, and I probably shouldn't forget people, but, you know, my mind's slipping as I'm recording. This is how you know I've got no notes in front of me. But I'm grateful. I'm really appreciative of them letting us use their gym to record. And that means I should caveat this by saying we've had to play around with the audio a bit, just because we ended up filming downstairs on the jiu-jitsu mat. So it was quite echoey. So just playing around with the audio, trying to get a sound that's a bit more compact, so you don't hear so much of the airiness. I mean, that's a lot of sliding of buttons and knobs and stuff. So if it's not sounding like this intro is, bear with us. The content will be worth it. So without further ado, let me introduce the interview with Alfie Warren. Enjoy, guys. Right, I've got Alfie Warren here. We were meant to start this at 10:30 in the morning. It's about 10 past one in the afternoon. And
it's been an adventure, Terry. It's been an adventure already, mate.
Well, we finally made it happen. So
two gyms later.
Yeah. So for context to the listeners, I said I'd do this pod with Alfie, just because it'd be an interesting conversation. and meant to meet at one boxing club at 10 o'clock for the pod, see the public workouts, you know, the usual thing I like to do, just aimlessly mingle. And then couldn't find any power there. Nightmare getting in for a start. So couldn't find any power, nightmare getting in. We've done some running around. We're now at the rival boxing gym, which is just around the corner. And if anyone is in North London, this might be the place you want to come and train if you want to learn boxing. So in the meantime, I've got to have a quick reunion with Hannah Rankin, Amy Andrew, and Newman Hussein, as well as Maz Abdullah, who I haven't seen since, Alfie, you like this, I hadn't seen him since the pandemic.
Wow.
So, well, no, what, probably 2021, 20, yeah. Mm. And I was in Camden, and I used to do this crazy thing, Alf, where I used to walk. I pick a random station, I just walk home from there, because there's nothing else you could do, right?
Yeah.
Load up a few podcasts and just walk. And I was walking through Camden, and I bumped into Maz, Natty Ngwenya, yeah, and Jackie Lee Price.
Yeah.
I spent about 5-6 hours together. Brilliant. Because, yeah, when you, like, I've known Jackie from the lodge for years, mate.
She's lovely, Jackie. But, yeah.
And then I knew Maz and Natty from just through boxing, right?
Yeah.
But never had the chance to sit down and talk. And I was just like, two brilliant people. And then ironically, these are two people who are now with Warren Boxing Management.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Masood, I remember the first time I ever seen Masood was at the, what did they, the Islington used to put the shows on, the National. Is it down near Euston? It's just off of the, off,
yeah.
Yeah. So someone, there was a, I can't even remember his name now. It was a fighter from the Repton. Someone said, you've got to come down, you've got to see this guy. He is absolutely the business. So I want you to come down. He knows you're coming down. We're going to go and see him. I went, okay. So I went down and my friend. All of a sudden, Masood's in the other corner. And Masood absolutely destroyed him. And this Repton guy was supposed to be like the next top thing. I'd love to get his name. I can't remember it. And I remember saying to my friend, well, that's the one we should be looking at. Masood, didn't see him for a year or anything like that. And we got back in contact and he ended up signing with us. So, I mean, it's a great setup down here. Amy Andrews, Newman Hussain, you know, one of the married couples, professional boxers. They've opened up a gym just stone throw from where I live, Caledonian Road. So I'm very pleased for them. And just to talk about our surroundings now, me and Terry are currently sitting on jiu-jitsu mats doing this podcast because of technical issues in the... It's been an adventure though, Terry, but we got there in the end anyway, mate.
Mate, you wouldn't have wanted it to be easy. I just...
That's correct.
Yeah, it's crazy. But why don't you tell us about Warren Boxing Management, mate? Because I think people have seen it. And one thing I'm aware of, and I get pulled up for this a lot, Alf, like, it can be quite London-focused. Oh, you lot just talk about this stuff because it's in London. Mm. But, like, you're not just London.
No.
And especially when we start to talk about Box Nation, I think you're looking beyond the border. So it's just good to give people an overview of Warren Boxing Management, you know, what sort of drove you to do that. Because I know, you know what people say, well, he's a Warren, what else would he do?
No, not at all. Do you know what? I didn't ever think about getting it. I wish I would have got into the business earlier, but I think it when I got to about 24, and it was nothing to do with professional boxing how I got involved. I mean, I was at every single big show. Like, I went there as a fan punter. I used to have a great time and all that, and I see all my family, me uncle, me cousins, all the guys that work for them, just being around those shows. But I never ever thought about getting into it. And what got me into it was a friend of mine called me up, and what he wanted was a famous boxer. He was doing a charity event in Shoreditch, and he wanted a famous boxer to come out and give the trophies out. And I remember they wanted one of Frank's fighters, Billy Joe Saunders at the time, and I tried to get them. They weren't available. And a friend of mine, I don't know if anyone's, well, say a friend of mine, who I knew, but at that time, who was around, was young Anthony Joshua. And no one really knew who he was apart from the boxing hardcores, because it was like he just come out of the World Championships. This is before the Olympics, but he was just going into the Olympics. And I said to Anthony, will you come down and give the medals out. So when Anthony turned up, they was all like looking at him. No one knew who it was. Like they went, and I said, right, and I introduced him because I got roped into doing the emceeing on a night as well because their MC dropped out, so I'd done that. And he ended up giving the medals out, and I remember people going, who's this guy like that? He was expecting so-and-so, and he gave out. I went, he's going to the Olympics, he's going to be representing Great Britain, all that. Anyway, they had their pictures done of him, and then fast forward, everyone's bringing those old pictures out. look who we had given the medals out all those years ago. But how I got roped into that was obviously bringing Anthony down to give the medals out, not getting roped into emceeing it. But it was really badly run, this show. It was the guys were supposed to be doing the timekeeping. There was people fighting for 4 or 5 minutes, and I was. It was a disaster. It was all stressing out. I got out and I got the show under control. And the only reason I done that is by being around Frank's shows and seeing how it was run, really. And I've done that. So 2 weeks after the event, my friend called me up and said, look, do you want to start doing more of these shows and all that? And I never thought about it. So I went, I'll tell you what, let's do that. And we ended up booking the Forum in Kentish Town, which was, it was crazy what we'd done, but we did end up packing it out, doing the white collar shows. And then once I'd done that show, it was just like, want to carry on doing it. So we were doing all these shows. And then it come to the point where we was approached by a mutual friend, Danny Williams, wanting to fight. He just recently lost his British license after he fought Chisora. So I remember we said, yeah, we'd love to do that. That would springboard our shows up, and we attract all the fighters that want to fight on there, all the white collar fighters. And we was looking for an opponent for him. I remember we actually approached, first person we approached was a friend of yours, Larry Alabama, because he just lost his license. He said, no, Danny's my brother, we'll never fight him. Danny said exactly the same, we will not fight each other anyway, which is a shame because it would have been good. And I was at one of Frank's shows before, and I was like, oh, who can we get to fight? And big Dominic Negus, who was doing the security, was there. I remember my brother went, should we ask Dominic? And we'd done that. He also lost his license with the board, so it picked up a big stink. And I think that's what really cemented it, that I wanted to get involved with boxing, is because it was such bad press about it, because they both, you know, lost their licenses. Danny just recently as well. But I didn't know the ins and outs of, you know, why Danny lost his license and all that. And I tell you what, I would never advocate it for someone, you know, if someone's lost their license with the board for a medical reason or whatever, they shouldn't be. I don't think they should be in the ring if it's down to medical grounds. But I was very naive at that point. But to be fair, Dominic was on the same sort of level as Danny, probably a little bit lower, but I mean, he was more, you know, unlicensed.
His game is anything, though, isn't it?
Yeah, Dominic's game is anything, but I mean, even in the unlicensed, he took the unlicensed shows over, but nothing, nowhere near in the class or caliber as Danny Williams or anything. So we put that show on, and where it's such a huge success, you know, you start getting flash about it. I was like, I could do this, professional boxing from home. What's the big deal? You know, I could do this. So I stopped doing those shows, and I had a meeting with Frank, and I said, look, I want to go into the professional boxing game. And Frank's advice was, no, do not get into this business whatsoever. I tried everything. I went, look, I'm very adamant. I want to do it. I want to do that. He went, right, if you do want to get into it, he said, do not be a promoter. He went, I am telling you now, don't. It's suicide. It's hard work. Everyone's going to try and screw you over. Everything is like, it's bad, right? So I said, well, what should I do? He said, why don't you be a manager? He went, manage some fighters and get them on the shows. He said, because what you're doing, I mean, you do have to invest in your fighters, which we do, but it's you know, you're providing a service for them. It's not, you're not going to lose a load of money on what you're doing, and you can just get up there, and all you'll do is probably earn. And so I went, yeah. So we had to go through the process. I said, so what? How do I go about getting a manager's license? Well, you've got to hold on to a border control license for 3 years before you get a manager's license. So I said, okay. And someone from the office, I went, well, what should I do? The second's license, trainer's, I don't know what license to hold. Anyway, so I said, whips license. Get a whips license, hold on to that, and work behind the scenes, which I did. And I started whipping the shows, Frank's shows, with Ernie Draper, from there. And then I learned to make all my contacts there, backstage, everything. And I learned such a lot from being around people in the game, from being backstage.
But for those people who, because there'll be people listening, go, what does a whip do? Just an overview of what a whip
do. Whip, you know, he's the guy, you know, who has to work, especially, that was the old Box Nation days with Frank. So you're working with the TV company to make sure that the fighters are ready on time, gloves are handed out, you know, all that sort of stuff. Everyone says like it's a lackey's job, but it's much more than that. But you're making sure everything backstage is running smoothly, it's running on time, everything. It is. I mean, Ernie Draper used to do it on his own, and I don't know how he used to do it, those big shows. I mean, he was the best in the business then. And yeah, I started doing it with him. And then Ernie retired, and then I was doing it on my own for a little while. Simon Legg ended up coming in, and he's done it, and he's probably the best in the country now, Simon. So, but the whole reason that I did get the whip's license was to get that manager's license. And when I did, I signed a couple of fighters on my own. And I mean, we had this conversation earlier, Terry. I actually did think, I'm going to sign this one, that one, that one. What can it be? All it is with a manager, that's all you've got to do. Just go to the promoter, get them a fight. That's when you're fighting, blah, blah, blah. But it's much more exactly what I thought that promoting was going to be. I thought that's what managing is going to be. Really, being a box, especially with professional boxers, if you've got a big stable, you have to do that full time. And I was finding it really, really hard. It was stressful, everything. And, you know, I'm very, very close with my brothers. There's four of us. And they end up coming in and helping me. And now, you know, it's not just Alfie Warren, the manager. It's now turned into Warren Boxing Management, the entity, the company, where all of us, you know, all got each other's backs, everything, and you know, it's absolutely worked. And I can't, you know, thank my brothers enough for coming in and helping me, because it's growing more and more now.
So you're gonna have to list the brothers, because people start going, yeah. Is it Francis? Is it George?
Because
we need to know the dividing line in the Warren clan.
No. So yeah, my father Robert, Frank's brother, obviously, and my brothers Sonny, Fred and Bobby. So, you know, we're really close-knit type of things, you know. They're, you know, more than my brothers. We're all, you know, best mates or whatever. You know, we really are a tight-knit. And, yeah, so like Francis, George and all that, they're all our cousins. But we're all a tight-knit, close family. And, you know, especially boxing, I think that's definitely brought the family closer together as well, even though the whole family was close anyway. And, yeah, that's where it is.
What happened? I was just thinking this just now. What happens in the Warren family group chat when there's been a robbery? Like, does it go mad? Because I do. In my head, I'm just thinking, someone gets jobbed and it's like absolute robbery. And I just imagine Frank coming and going, none of you lot know nothing about boxing. And then it just goes, Frank Warren has left the group.
Well, but our Warren's ones are divided anyway. So, I mean, our Warren group chat is all down to my old man and my brothers and all that. I'd love to get one together, though, with the cousins and Frank and all that. I think that would that would be interesting anyway. But I could imagine, knowing our family, it'd be non-stop arguments and all that. But, yeah, do you know, it's good with our family, especially my brothers and all that. You know, we row all the time. I mean, heated rows sometimes. But it's like one of these ones, you know, after an hour or so, you know, if one of us needs something done after a big argument, we ring each other. It's like it never happened. Yeah. You know, it's just, let's just get on with it. And it is interesting, especially the half of the Warren group chat we got with my dad and my brothers as well. Not for the faint-hearted, I don't think.
Because I always remember you guys would be in the IFL interviews for ages, and then we'd always be like, what do these guys do? And I remember they'd always ask your old man, what do you actually do in boxing?
Yeah.
And he'd never answer, would he? He's like, just show up. Just make sure things are all right. And he'd always have that accent, like that real old school Islington accent where you're like, maybe you don't want to ask too many more questions after this.
He's all good, my dad. You know, listen, he's worked on the shows and behind the scenes for a lot of years as well, and he does. He takes care of a lot of people behind the scenes. He makes sure everything gets done. If things have to get done, they'll get done. And Rob's your man to, if there is a problem that needs sorting out, especially on our sides with our fight weeks and all that, and to an extent on Frank's shows as well. If you need something sorted out, he'll make sure it's sorted out. Because the one thing about my dad, he most family orientated person as well. So anything need doing for his family, he'll do. No questions asked.
And then just to check, so who was the first person you signed?
First person I signed was who you just met there, Billy Underwood. Young Billy Underwood come out the amateurs. I signed him officially because, I mean, up until then, I remember I was co-managing fighters with Jason McCauley under his license. So that's where I learned as well. I learned a lot of Jason and also like Andy Aylin as well up the office and my cousins and all that. Especially about managing and all that. So, but the first one I signed on my own was Billy Underwood, and had high hopes for Bill, but it was always stop start, and he'll tell you himself it's to his, most of it was his fault, but he was just, wasn't as dedicated now. He's trying now, he's just had a little baby and all that now, and he wants to, get into it and be dedicated. But like what we've said before, if you're a professional fighter, your job is a professional fighter. You have got to stay ready. You've got to be in there. I don't want to hear no excuses. Can't get the weight down. You should be, you shouldn't be too far off your weight if you're a professional fighter. I always say that. And that's why I love working with Masood, Newman, Natty, all those guys as well. They're so dedicated to what they're doing. They're never, ever, ever overweight. Always fighting fit. If I was to say to Newman, even Masood, especially Masood now, because he's at that high level. If I was saying, Masood, I've been offered a world title fight for you in 2 weeks, I would have nothing would go in my head where I don't think he would be prepared for that, especially fitness-wise. Anyway.
Mate, yeah, that's my pet peeve in boxing, where too many people treat it like a sport. Mm-hmm. Like you play Sunday League football, you train Tuesdays, you train Thursdays. If you miss Tuesday, like I can make it up on Thursday, you normally can at that level, yeah. Right? When you're a professional boxer, you can't get away with that, mate. And I tell them, I say, if I was ever blessed enough to be a boxer, on God, I'd be in the gym at 9 and I'd leave the gym about 4 o'clock. And in between then, I'd make sure all my work was done.
Do you know what winds me up as well, Tell? So along the lines you've done that. I've had 4-round fighters go like that. Right, you're fighting the 4-round. Right, I better get into camp. Camp? You should be 4 rounds fit, doing everything. When I call you up and all that, what do you need to go into camp for a 4-round fight for? It's just madness. It's like it just really, really winds me up sometimes when I hear fighters say that. Right, I'm getting in the camp. No, it's a 4-round fight. You should be doing that on your head. You're doing more rounds sparring. And you probably will have harder spars than what you have in that 4-round fight. It's just. I don't know, especially this generation now. It's just madness, honestly.
But it's also the trainers, Alf.
Yeah.
The trainers, trainers are quite insecure people in general.
Yeah.
So then they start panicking. Oh, he's going to fight. What if he loses? It's like, it's a 4-rounder.
I have that so much, honestly. And I ain't going to say names. I don't want to embarrass them, but I've had trainers, I go, right, he's fighting him. Nah. It's a journeyman, for God's sake. You're supposed to be like that. They'll turn journeyman down, and then they'll go, we'll accept that one. And half the time, I don't even think some of these guys even know what they're looking at or what they're doing. They go, oh, we'll have him. I go, I feel like going to him. You explain to me why you'll have him, but not him. What is the difference between this one and that one? Like, it's just mad. And I agree with you with the trainers being insecure. Even at the high level, when trainers, you see it all the time. The trainers are turning down title fights. I don't think, as well, I've always said this, I don't think it's that they've not got the faith in the boxer. I don't think they've got the faith in themselves. Especially like in shoot, like if there was to, have a fight where it's going to be 50-50 in a shootout, and I don't think they've got the confidence in themselves where they can go back to that corner and they'll know what to do in that situation. Say if they have a bad round, get smashed to pieces and come back that round. I don't think that's what I think. And, I try and install that into my brother Fred, who's doing really well down the Times. He's Times ABC. He's, training the amateurs and all that. But you see all these fighters now, that are not, you know, that are not, they're not doing their apprentice, so to speak. Because I said it to Fred, I mean, you can easily go and get a professional trainer's license and do that, but then you don't know what you're doing. And some of these trainers, really, honestly, they've just jumped the levels. You know, they get pally with, you know, fighters and all that at a certain level, and then they become their trainers and all that. And I just think, but I think that that's mostly down to some of the fighters as well, because I think the fighters are just comfortable down there because they probably, with those trainers, they probably call the shots with them. And, you know, and they can do what they do with them. But yeah, I absolutely agree with you, especially the trainer thing. It's, I think that's what they're lacking. I just think that people are coming in, they know the right people, they know the right, you know, actually I'd say, yeah, know the right people, get pally with everyone, and then all of a sudden they're training high caliber professionals, and it's just, it's madness. It's madness.
Mate, we're 20 minutes in and we're about to start ranting and raving because it's my bugbear, right? And that's why I kind of watch Warren Boxing Management with interest, because I want to see where that goes with interest. Because if I was managing fighters, I'd be looking at the trainer and I'd be asking a lot of hard questions. Mm. And I'd be like, well, what does it take to get a guy ready for a world title fight? Mm. Okay, why aren't we doing that now?
Yeah.
Because I don't want him to have to figure out what training for a world championship fight is when he's got one coming up. Yeah. I want it to just be seamless, like he's already at that level, physically, mentally, all of that. And then you realize a lot of these trainers don't really understand how to train fighters because, Alf, do you know how they get these guys? I tell you, on God, they go on Instagram, and let's not name names, but it's be pretty obvious what I'm talking about. Mm. They do the silly little pad routines. Someone sees it and goes, do you know what, mate? My body's a bit banged up. Can you just do the pad work for my guy? I'll watch and make sure I like what I see. And they come in, all right. And then the little chats happen. The little DMs.
That's it.
Look, you know what? If we just had more time together, here are the things I could fix. And they sell this fighter a dream. And then the fighter's like, yeah, the pad work feels good. Yeah. And before you know it, you're now training with a guy who's essentially a pad man and you're expecting him to guide you to a world title. And I say to people, I had this conversation with Porky Russ the other day. I said, if you look at Fraser Clark versus Fabio Wardley, those guys landed about 300 punches, okay? So 300 punches, let's say at about 25% connect rate. So that's about, I don't know, 1,200 punches, we'll say, between the pair of them. That's 100 punches a round. Fifth of a second? Nah, well, 0.2 second for a punch, I reckon, roughly.
Yeah.
What about the other 30 minutes?
Yeah.
That's still boxing, right?
Yeah, of course.
That other 30 minutes is still being judged.
Yeah.
Are you coaching for that other 30 minutes?
Do you know what? Yeah, that's a great point. And I, honestly, you look at it like that, that is true. It is true. And but it, like, even with judges these days, they're saying, oh, it's what you look for. But do you know what? So we do get some bad judges. But on the majority, most of them do know exactly what they're doing. Yeah. You're going to get the odd bad judge, you know, on the thing. And, you know, some judges might have a bad night at the office and, you know, get things wrong. They're human and they do get things wrong. But absolutely right with the trainer situation. I just don't think that some of them are equipped. And that is all good. That's the point, going off topic. The point that I want to make, you know, everyone always says this about the promoters and managers, right? About you got to be careful with them. He's going to try and sneak into you. Absolute point what you just made. Trainers, I'm telling you now, it is worse than it's ever been. And, you know, they're all pally. They come down to the gym and all that. I've got, you know, you get some, you know, I've had it recently, you know, some, especially like with the amateurs and professionals, someone comes down with their fighter to spar and the trainer's running a bit late. And they say, I've seen the trainer go, get in the ring and all that. Like, I mean, that's a no-go and the trainer should know that, but it is. And they're... you know, trainers are, it is just as bad as what people imagine what the managers and promoters are trying to get in people's ear. It is really bad.
But it's horrible. Like, if it was just men's boxing, right, you'd be like, nah, all right, I get it. But their trainers sliding into the female boxers' DMs. Like, mate, I get sent this stuff, right? I think people generally know I fly straight.
Yeah.
So they'll be like, look at what this idiot sent me, and I read this stuff. I'm like, oh my God, you're saying you want to train someone. Oh, we should meet over a drink to discuss it. What part of the game is that? And mate, that's one of the things, like, and you hear me bang the drum about it a lot. I wish the quality of trainers in London would go up. But one of the big problems, Alf, is no one wants to listen. Like, so when I was younger, I played rugby, right? If I'm running a team, I'll call my mate from another club to come and watch the session. What am I missing? What are you seeing that I'm not seeing?
Yeah.
And we'll have a chat, we'll have a beer afterwards, and he'll give me his views. That doesn't make me any less of a trainer. He's not going to come and nick my team, is he? He's going to come and have a look, give me his wisdom. I'll go and have a look at his setup.
Yeah.
You'd never get that in boxing.
No, I think you're absolutely right as well. They don't want to listen to some trainers, and it's pig ignorance as well. And I just going back saying that about my brother Fred, do it the right way. Start off training, you know, he's starting his training journey now. Start off training the junior amateurs. Start doing that. If anything, if you want to be a pro trainer, get a seconds license. Go in the corners, listen to what they're doing. That's how it should be, because that's how you're going to make a good trainer. Because, you know, all these trainers, you can get a license and all that, and, you know, you can have your 15 minutes of fame with these fighters, but ultimately you will get found out at a higher level when you do step up. And the thing about it is, though, when you do mess up at that level, that is when your downfall is going to happen, because everyone, you know, you will get exposed eventually. You have to learn. Listen, experienced trainers like, who should I say? Jimmy Tibbs, who used to be, you know, up north. Joe Gallagher. All these other trainers, listen, they've had bad nights at the office. They've gone on bad runs before and all that. But what separates it from them is that they can come back. They know, like, what they're doing. That's why these fighters do go to these trainers. But I think with the reason why some of these high-caliber ones want to choose these trainers, because if they did go to these other experienced trainers, they wouldn't stand for their nonsense and all that. And that's what it is. It is exactly what it is. I've seen it so many times, even with fighters I've been involved with. They turn up to the gym when they want. They do their runs when they want. They do that, and they stand for it because they want to be associated. And it is. It's all social media crap. They just want to be, you know, Instagram trainers and all that. But that goes with the box as well. They just want to be Instagram boxers as well.
People want to say they train. People want to say they box. They don't actually want to do the thing.
That's it.
And this is why, like, when people say to me, boxing trainers you respect, I always use the name Eddie Lamb. And I love
it. Yeah, Eddie's lovely fella.
Because if you look at Ed, last 5 years, Ed's really become public.
Do you know what? That's what I'm saying. I remember Ed when he, like, the Box Nation days, when he was so young, training with Al Smith. And he's a fantastic, listen, he's over in Vegas now, training Sky Nicholson for a world title fight, how far he's come. But I think he's there on merit. And how he learned, being never a head trainer and all that, he was a good amateur fighter in his own right, you know. He worked, I believe he worked right in the corners for the amateurs and all that, went on to
Al Smith. Yeah, he did kettles.
Yeah, there you go. Done that. He done it the right way. I think, you know what, absolutely agree with you. I think Eddie Lamb's going to be a fantastic trainer. I think he already is.
Yeah,
anyway. I think so. I mean, I talk about, like, London fighters, like London trainers, sorry, and all that. I actually would put Eddie Lamb in the bracket if I wanted to send a young fighter down there to do that. He has done it the right way, and he's a lovely fella as well to go with it.
I do. And then the other thing I learned in my time was you get these other kind of trainers, like the name I use a lot, people make fun of me for saying, is like a Chris Smedley, a guy who took Liam Cameron from an 11-year-old lad to a Commonwealth middleweight champion.
Yeah.
Right? And you look at that and you go, that's a proper trainer.
Yeah.
Because Chris can do that again. He did it with his lads, like Luke and Nicky Smedley. Rest in peace to Luke. But he did that. He built fighters.
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys, like I said, the pad routines look cool. They go on the internet. They nick someone else's ideas. Mm. They pad them as their own. And you can do that against a journeyman who's not there to win. And then you get to a certain level where you're fighting people as good as your person. And you get found out.
Yeah, and do you know what? I think what we're lacking in this country as well, because especially with these young guys coming around as well, it's like they'll do the session with them and that's it. They'll go on their separate ways and they'll just meet back in the gym. I think we're lacking coaches, not even trainers, coaches. The people, you know, Brendan Ingle was the, you know, it was the master at it, I think. And, you know, getting into that kid's house when they're down, when they're that, you know, knowing their moods and all that. I think Billy Graham and Ricky Hatton, was they knew each other. I think he was more than just a trainer, he was a coach to him as well. Like, and you know, I don't think some of these guys, you know, we're getting 22, 23 year old pro trainers, you know, training people for championship fights. It's madness, it's madness, you know. Like, listen, that's when you're really, you know, you're starting, you think. But I was like mad. But you know what though? To be fair, I thought that I knew everything at that age, 24, 25. Like I was saying, when I was doing the white collar things, I went, "Oh, I'm gonna do that. I'll be bigger than all of them. I can do everything, and all that." And you do think you could do everything. But realistically, when you're at that age, you're not. You're starting your own journey on life as well, really.
But when I talk about training people, I always talk about the mistakes I made. The stuff that I thought I knew and that turned out to be absolute rubbish.
Yeah.
And I go, I went through an initial phase where I was all about hard sparring because I was like, tough environments will make for tough men. Just make it as rough as possible. All your bag sessions had to be balls to the wall. And then I just started speaking to other people, boxers from other cultures, guys from Uzbekistan, Azerbaijan. And they'd look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah.
Why you punch with power all the time?
Everyone's different, isn't it, really? Every person is different. You know, you put you could have a fantastic fighter and go all the way and all that. You put them in that environment, like what you just said, like hard things and all that, they probably couldn't hack it, really. It's different. It's, like you say, I think it's the ability of reading a fighter and seeing what he needs as well. Because not everyone's method is going to work on every single boxer. I think that's a talent in itself.
Yeah. I have that thing. Well, people have said, you know, do you turn into a pro trainer and work with me? And I just go, no. I don't need the money.
No, that's right.
Number two, are you mentally in a place where you can come round to my way of thinking? Because people may not like this, but I have a really fixed view on boxing, right?
Yeah.
Wherever I go, I always just break it down into my standards, my values, and my principles.
Yeah.
They don't deviate from anyone. Why?
Because
I know they work. And so I say to someone, this is what we're going to do. We're going to focus on three main areas: your technique, your decision-making, and your pace.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's really what wins fights. All the other stuff is just talk. If you're good technically, great. If you're a good decision-maker, you ain't got to wait for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is good. And pace will turn the hardest man into a coward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is, yeah. Absolutely.
It's not a hard sport to figure out, but these are very hard things to make real. And when you hear some of these guys talk, you know, I remember when Adam Booth would do it. First name I've named today, but you know, the war's already started. But I remember when Adam Booth would talk.
Yeah.
And he'd always talk about these too much jargon, and you're like, mate, what are you really trying to say here? Is you don't know what you're on about. Because when I got told that he used to take notes from Ishmael Salas when Salas was training Hay,
yeah,
I was like, oh, that's when I started calling him the hoax. I was like, no.
Yeah.
Really? Why don't you tell us that then? Well, why is that such a secret?
Yeah.
And
that's like a copy and paste sort of thing.
Yeah, it's an issue. And then I was looking at it, and I look at you, Alf, and I go, you're now building your stable as a manager. So is your role as a manager to make sure that you get your boxer with the right trainer? And if so, how do you go about that matching process?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's whoever the fighter feels comfortable with, first of all. You know, I will definitely, when they're starting out, set up trials for fighters to go down to those trainers and all that. And do you know what? Sometimes I've gone down there and they pick the one that I wouldn't pick. But what it is, especially with my brothers and all that, you have to keep on top of what they're doing in that gym. And, you know, my brother Sonny, more than anyone, is the man who does do that. He keeps an eye, keeps in contact with the trainers, more so the fighters and all that. And, you know, he builds good relationships up with those fighters. I mean, Sonny and Masood, like, how they are as well, you know. Masood would confide into Sonny more than he would confide into me, but there'd be other fighters that are confined more into me than they would. It's different like that. But yeah, especially when picking the trainers, I always, you know, especially when they're, when they're starting off, you know, you sign fighters that are already with trainers and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, you keep that there and all that. But you look at it, and sometimes, you know, when their performances ain't up to par, you have to have that uncomfortable conversation with them. And, you know, the trainers are not going to like it and all that, but it is for their own good. If they're not performing, you know, to the standard what you think they're going to perform, and you, like, there's fighters out there that are performing to standards of, like, central area level, and I think, no, I know that you're better than that, but the only reason you are performing there is because you've not got the right people around you. And you do have to have that uncomfortable conversation going, look, I think you've got to move on. Some fighters don't like that as well, because, you know, listen, fighters and trainers or whatever, they do form a bond.
Yeah.
But some of these trainers, you know, they're not stupid. They must know that the formula for this fight is not working. If you really do care for that fighter and it's not working, you know, it's not an ego thing. You should hold your hands up, you know, and say, look, I don't think it's working. An example, which I don't think you should ever move on, was Richie Sawyer and Archie Sharp. It was working fabulously. And then they had, like, a performance, and Richie went, look, it's getting a bit stale. And he actually advised Archie to move. He went, look, do that. And he moved trainers, and now he's back with Richard Sawyer, which he shouldn't have left anyway. But I think that that's a prime example of a trainer, like, knowing that something's going wrong in the gym, going, look, I think it's time to move on, you know, and, like, for your own good, because he obviously sees something in that gym with the fighter that wasn't working and done that for the fighter's own good, and that's very rare. I always use that as an example of Richie Sawyer as well, because I think that takes a, you know, good man to do that for a fighter, because there's other people, you know, who want to cling on to that. So
see, but then I always look at it from a trainer's perspective, where I'm like, you shouldn't be the same trainer this year that you were last year. Because the world, I mean, mate, like, the stuff, like, I'll read stuff and it'll go, well, actually, if you take this before you train, like, it may even be something like, I don't even know, we'll just say, like, Himalayan sea salt. Oh, this will elevate your levels of this and that. It will help you train. I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah.
And then I might go away and try it myself, and I go, okay, I felt something there.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, that might work. And then you kind of guinea pig it with your fighters. But everything, you bring a new thing. Like, I'll give you a good example of this for me was, I had a lad I used to train in the amateurs, Ross Boyle. Did all right in the ABAs here, did all right in the Ulsters as well. Good guy, like, what, you're one of those guys, corporate guy, but hard as nails. Yeah? But before every big tournament, he always needed a new weapon. Not technically, but, you know, mentally, he needed a new weapon.
Yeah.
So you always have to bring something fresh and new with him. He had to train differently, and that gave him confidence. Right? You couldn't give him the same stale thing, or he just kind of moved past you. And then you've got John Pallata, who I trained as well. And, like, he's very, oh, we did this last time, man, and we've got nothing better to do.
Yeah.
Like, he'll press you.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe in yourself, if you're not developing, if you're not trying to excel the same way he is, man, he'll just sack you off.
Absolutely. But I think that goes for what we're doing as well, management thing. I think, you know, we had a good year this year. We got to deliver more next year, and all that sort of stuff. Because that's how we, especially as a management company, that's how we're going to propel to get them to the top level, you know, and do that. If we can only deliver them, you know, we've got Masood, right, we've got him to the Commonwealth level now we've got to deliver this in sponsorship, right? So, right, we're delivering this sponsorship for this fight, I would say. We've got him £1,000 a year. Right, next year, he's got to get double that. He's got to get that. He's got to get that. That's what we got to do. I think, it works in all areas of boxing, but I think you're absolutely right. And the boxer, like what you said with Pallata, expects that off you, and that's what the boxers should, and they press us to do that, and that's what makes us better. Absolutely.
This is what I say to every boxer. I say, it's your career. They're getting paid out of your money.
Absolutely.
So they're service providers. Mm. And you should be able to say, well, show me the value you're delivering.
Exactly.
And then if you're really about that, you should be fine. You should be like, well, there you go. When you started, you were here. Here's what we've done for you.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's right. And I always say to them, listen, I always say to all the fighters, when you sign from, you deliver in the ring, we'll deliver outside the ring big time as well. But you've got to deliver in the ring. You know, I mean, we work with fighters on all levels. You know, I've got work with fighters that are going to which I believe are going to be world champions. I think Masood up there, I think that he's got the capability of being a world champion. I don't care what anyone says and all that. I think barring Nick Ball and Lee Wood, who you know, former world champions, apart from them two, I think that he's the best featherweight in the country. I really do believe that. You know, Nathaniel Collins and Hopi Price, I think he does a job on both of them. And you know, we got Masood at that level. We got Southern Area levels. I got fighters. If they won a Southern Area title, I've done my job. That's like me winning them a world title. We work on all levels. But yeah, like you say, for us to perform as a management and to get more things for them, they have to deliver in the ring. If they deliver in the ring, it makes our job a lot easier. Deliver them outside the ring, but we work hard from all on every level and. You know, so far so good with our fighters. They all seem happy, you know, and now, especially with Box Nation now making a return, you know, with Umar as well. Very pleased for him that he's on that channel. And
I'm gonna ask, so how did that come about? And the reason I asked that, Alf, is I heard rumors a while ago that Box Nation was for sale and that people were trying to buy it, and I was like,
It's a big brand to buy, you know. It's very recognisable, you know. It was a pillar of British boxing for years. You know what I mean? Definitely. I mean, that was the only thing that was ever rivaling Sky Sports at the time.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so how did it go? Because at the time, like, Box Nation was just kind of this thing that was always in the background in your subscription, and you'd watch, you know, if you wanted to watch some fights from 10 years ago, you could watch a lot of really good fights. Yeah. Okay. And then now all of a sudden we've got the rebrand, we've got new people involved. So how has all that come about?
Well, you know, we heard about the new rebrand. We knew that Umar was involved and we knew a few people behind the scenes that are involved with it. Especially the shows we've been putting on. We all had a meeting with everyone and, you know, we said, look, we want to showcase our fighters on the channel. You know, it's a massive channel. I think it'll go from strength to strength. The rebrand, I think it's a very smart move getting Umar involved in it as well. You know, he's done a fantastic job at IFL. But, I mean, the main objective that I got with Box Nation, because first and foremost, I mean, like I said to you before, we were saying about, I want to be a promoter. I don't want to be a promoter. I want to put these shows on to showcase the fighters that I manage. This project with Box Nation is no way a thing to go, we're going to rival Queensbury and Eddie Earn. It's levels and levels and levels and levels below.
No.
And that's like, it really is. But that's not the idea of the thing. The idea of the thing is to put it on, you know, we've been putting on small shows, you know, with various other promoters and been showcasing our fighters on those shows. But for this, you know, it's a platform to see these fighters now. And that's all we want. My objective as a manager is, I've said it to every single fighter, I don't want you fighting on small shows. I want you fighting on the big shows, whether it's in the away corner, whether you're getting a contract to be in the home corner. That is where I need to take you on. And to have this now, and for them, which is fantastic for Box Nation to do that, is put on small hall shows now. Because, you know, you see some of these small hall classics that never get the light of day, that are very rarely recorded. You're just hearing it word of mouth. And with this one, I just think it's fantastic. These small hall fighters are going to get the recognition they are. And when they do eventually sign up with these big promoters, and these promoters go, I want that kid, you know, their value is higher than what it would have been if I was fighting on a York Hall show that no one was seeing him on as well.
So almost you're thinking about people listening at home now where they'll be asking, so is this a feeder into Queensbury or...
No, it's a feeder into everyone. But okay. We're open to everyone, really. You know, Sky Sports, TNT, Queensbury, any promotional outfit wants to come to talk to one of our fighters. We're open to it. It's not just Queensbury because of family ties, but... You know, Queensbury, you know, is my family, it is my blood, and, you know, they would always, you know, if they wanted something, you know, a fight or anything like that, I would prefer that I do sign fighters with Queensbury because I know how they work, you know, we've got the relationship there, the family relationship there. I would there, but any other promoter wanted to come in, you know, it's not just, we're Warrens, we're going to work with them. But the thing is, if a promoter comes in and they wanted to work with one of our fighters, don't get it twisted. If you sign that fighter and you believe in that fighter, we're with you all the way. It's not, we want you to build them up and we're going to take them over to Queensbury or something because of the family ties. That's not how it works whatsoever. If you get behind our fighter, that fighter is yours and we're behind you, and that's it. You know, that's the way I've been brought up as well. You know, I'm not nothing like that whatsoever. I've been brought up to say, right, listen, if we do a deal with you, we're all in. As long as you're all in, we're all in. And that's how it is. That's how my father's instilled it into me, and my mother as well. That's it. It's nothing, you know. You're loyal to us, we'll be loyal to you, and that's it.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask you this question. Warren Boxing Management, give the fans five fighters and five reasons to be excited by them.
Right. We've already mentioned him already, Masood Abdullah. If you haven't already seen him, which I think most of the listeners have seen him against, you know, his breakout fights with Mark Leach and Cash Ashfaq, he's one of the most exciting fighters in the country. 100%, he's one of the most exciting fighters. James Hennigan from Liverpool, he's been a bit stop-start, but he is one of the most naturally talented boxers that I've come across. His reflexes, everything. He's a joy to watch. He's a nightmare for everyone. I think he's going to have a breakout year this year. He's going to be featuring on our Box Nation card on the 26th of April. So that's fantastic for him. He'll be high up on the card there. Young Karim Ages. I really, really rate. Super flyweight fighter who punches exactly like heavyweight. He is absolutely exciting. He's, you know, he's had a lot of problems outside the ring now, and he's got himself together now. He's up training in Brentwood with Yuri Robertson and Kevin Mitchell and all those guys. He's settled in there. You know, that's another, talking about fighters gelling with trainers. Very, very, very experienced up there, and that's why I like that setup there with Yuri Robertson and all that. You know, he's got Kevin Mitchell and all that. It's a big training team, not just a trainer. So it's fantastic up there. Who else are we looking forward to? Casey Kademi, always have to mention him as well, because you know he had a great fight in January against the South African for the IBO. It was never his weight, but he had the chance to fight for that title. Went down there, he come up short, and now he's fighting Ryan Farag in April. You know, straight back on it. I love working with Casey. He's never in a bad fight. He wins that Commonwealth title again. I think that's him reborn as well, and his fan base has stayed so solid with him all throughout, and you know, we've done a fantastic job of him, and he's been very good with us. Fifth fighter,
Cruiserweight, come on.
Do you know what? Listen, we work with him, with Costas Evangelou, Ezra Taylor, and we work with Ezra Taylor.
I was hoping for Natty, but all right.
Natty's got to get his ass back in that gym as well, you know. Honestly, I love Natty. Do you know what? He's a fantastic fight, brilliant fighter, and you know, I hope we had a couple of medical problems with the board for his last fight as well. So we just got to get those things tweaked out as well. But yeah, Natty definitely, I think, you know, if we get what we have to get straightened out and get him back on the horse. I think that he's good enough to be fast-tracked now as well. Not too fast, but fast-tracked. And I think he could definitely be a player in the cruiserweight division, 100%.
Because him and I remember we're having an argument about whether we're related or not. And like, I remember this. We're trying to get deep into it. I was trying to explain to him. Because like, in Zimbabwean culture, like, your name's kind of your name.
Yeah.
So if you've got a certain name, like, you're from that bloodline, right? No debate, that's it. And I know on my mum's side, they married into that family because I've got cousins with the same name in Gwenya, right? My cousins, Royce and so forth. I've got cousins. I was like, Natty, we're related. We can't not be related. And he's looking at me like, I don't think we are, mate. I was like, this is Zimbabwean culture. We are related, man. I was like, look at us. We look kind of similar.
You're like twins, yeah. But I hope he does. Listen, we get everything done. I love Natty. He's such a character as well. And you know, he's one of the British troops as well. And people should just get behind him for his journey, and hopefully we get what we have to get behind the scenes. We get all that sorted, and he'll be back in the ring.
I'd love to see him back, because I mean, he's part of that sort of exciting thing, and that whole kind of Stevie Broughton thing.
Yeah.
And like, he seems to be coming like almost like the trainer of choice for Warren Boxing Management. And
yeah, he trains a lot of our guys, you know, Newman, Masood, Natty. You know, he's got Amy Andrews up there as well, who we don't manage, but, you know, very, very good friends of him. And he's, like, we was going back to the thingy, he was having a chat with Amy prior to this about, you know, a gym environment and how important it is. And they've definitely got it up there. They really, really have. And with Steve, he's another one, doesn't do it on his own. He's got a training team up there as well who work with him, you know. He's not too pig-headedness to know that, you can't do it on your own. You do need a team. Like, I need a team with the management company. That's what's took it to strength to strength. You can't all do it on your own. Even promoters, you know, you look at, you know, Frank and Eddie. You know, they're the ones that everyone knows. They're in front of the camera, but they've got a solid team behind them. You need that. You do. You need people behind you to help you. And I think that's what makes it successful in all walks of life.
That's one of the things I've learned in life. Success moves in groups.
Exactly.
No one's ever successful on their own.
Yeah.
You may not see the other people, but they're there. You need that. Like, and I don't know what it is, but it's that kind of that group energy. It's why I always found it odd when I'd see boxers get their own gym, and it was just them in the gym. Because look at Joshua now. You know, Joshua goes to the Ben Davison Performance Centre. He's around Courtney Bennett, he's around Jamie TKV, he's around young Alois the Animal. He's around young, hungry people.
That's it.
And you can see his demeanour in the gym. He loves being there now.
Yeah.
You know. And I'm like, why would you isolate yourself from that? Like,
it must be a good, like I say, because he did used to isolate himself, didn't he? But I mean, being around like that, and you got these fighters looking up to you, it must egg you on a little bit more. Going, you know what? I can't let these guys down. That's the mentality that he's got.
I can't be out trained by these guys.
Exactly.
No way.
Exactly that. Another point. Yeah.
All of that stuff, because like Steve Broughton's one of the people. Like, if you say to me, people in boxing that you're proud of, right? Mm-hmm. I remember when he first sort of came on the scene with Shane, and people were like, oh, who is he, mate? He doesn't deserve this. And then he got to work with David when Shane parted ways.
Yeah.
And the usual hate came out.
Yeah.
And the trainer mafia comes out. Who's this guy? What's he done? What's he done to deserve this? I mean, I've been doing this 55 years and I don't get breaks like this. And he kept building.
Yeah.
Didn't make any noise. Kept building. Had a few setbacks, had a few knockbacks. Kept building, but because he's a nice guy, he doesn't alienate people. We just see that growth. And even when you got Joe and people said he's in over his head, I was like, nah, he's smart. He was 80% of boxing is intelligence. People think it's knowledge. It's not knowledge. No. It's intelligence.
It's definitely as well. Willing to learn, and which you say he's done it with Shane and all that. He's been in the corners and everything. Yeah. I know a good friend of yours, which, do you know what I love, and I think he'll be one of the best trainers in there, Danelle Smith. You know, I really, really do like him. I really rate him as well, and he just wants to learn all the time. And I've always noticed that about him. And he was in the Sims camp for ages, even with AJ and all that. And he's just learned, and you know, I reckon, you know, he's you know, ready to do that. I think he'll do good things with Courtney Bennett. I really do think that they're a good match with each other.
I hope so.
Yeah.
this is my case study for success if it is.
Yeah.
I think with me when I look at that pairing, all they have to do is just demand more of each other.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. If they're hungry to be the greatest, then like I sit there and I say to myself, because I got asked this question. They said, mate, what do you want to do in boxing? Because I get asked this a lot, because I do a lot of things in boxing. So what do you actually want to do? And I said, for me, if you gave me all the money in the world, all I'd do is open up an amateur gym and train kids.
Yeah.
And all I'd want to do is win the ABAs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't care about the Olympics anymore. Just want to win. I want people to come to my gym the same way they go up to the Ingle gym.
Yeah.
And you know what quality went through those
doors. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's why. That's all I care about. And then people say, "So you want to be a coach?" And I say, "I think I'm more now. I'm more of a director of boxing."
Yeah.
Like I'm a bit sooty now, Alpha. I'm not gonna lie. I'm a bit sooty.
One of them people.
Yeah. I like to just point, and talk. I don't do the pads anymore. I just point and talk.
That's it.
Yeah. I give advice and guidance. But it is that's what enjoys me. That's what, and I always say to people, there's one thing about boxing everyone enjoys. All the other bits are nice, but there's that one thing that draws you in. For me, it will always be fighters and gyms.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is for you as a manager. You might just love the game.
I do, but you know what? You're saying that, Terry, honestly, there's so many, you know. Honestly, and that is really the joy of having a team as well, because you know I've got a low tolerance, especially for bullshitters and really two-faced people, because there's so many of them, managers, promoters, and you know what as well, blaggers, so many of them, and you know I get, you know that I never listen. If it's that bad, I'll confront it and I'll have it out. I'm not afraid to ever do that, but you know. If someone does anything to me in a professional game, I just drop them out, and I make them know that I've dropped them out as well. I'll be civil to people and all that, but I ain't got the time, I ain't got the energy to waste of it. You know, I used to be crash bang wallop and all that, especially in boxing. If someone done something and all that, but I've learned as I got older. Do you know what? Just drop them out now. But that's the beauty of having the team, because you know I have to do right by our fighters. You know, I can't just say I'm not dealing with that one because, you know, I've got a personal thing against them and all that, because I wouldn't be doing my job as a manager. I've got to have all avenues. But, you know, people that I haven't got no patience with, I haven't got the time of day for, and there's a few of them in this sport. That's why I've got a good team. You know, if I don't want to deal with them, one of my brothers will deal with them, and vice versa. If my brothers don't want to deal with someone, I'll deal with them and all that. And that's probably the beauty of having a team. But, you know, in professional boxing, I remember someone told me before, you know, I won't say the word, but they say, you'll meet more CU next Tuesdays in boxing than you'll meet in your entire life outside of it. And I tell you what, they was right. They was really, really right. And, you know, but I do. I've got some great friends in boxing as well. Some good law friends, and you know, I love going to the shows. I love having a laugh with them and all that. And you know, it's good because we can mix that with the fight. I do like being on a fight night, especially my fighter as well. You know, being in a big fight, it's such a buzz. It really, really is. And when they win, it's an even bigger buzz. And to think that I've took them there as well, but. It's exactly what I do it for as well. But I just don't want to, you know, be sucked into some of this, you know, boxing bubble thing where everyone's, you know, it's cringe, some of this stuff.
Well, like Matchroom. Don't answer. You don't have to answer. I'll say it.
No, not even that. No, it's, do you know, like some trainers, managers, you know, who are so far, and they're publicly doing it, you know, YouTube videos and tweets and things, and you think to myself, my goodness me, it's just like, you know, show me some attention. They want a pat on the back from all the big wigs and all that. That's not me whatsoever. That really, really ain't me. And, you know, some people will probably go, you know, they'll go the extra mile and all that, but sometimes I like to have a little bit of dignity, but some of these guys haven't, you know. And, you know, some people going out there bashing other people because it will please that promoter. They want to be seen pleasing a certain promoter. Oh, look, I'm doing this for you. I'm doing a PR job for you. They're not even being asked to do it. They're actually doing it off their own back to do it, which is, you know, you're not even getting not even getting paid to do it or anything like that. It's just, it's madness.
Do you know what? One of my friends described it perfectly. He just went, boxing's just full of bag carriers. That's what he said. Boxing is just full of bag carriers, people who will do it for free just to say that they were there. And it was like, there's no value. Like, that's why boxing is a joke of a sport. But you know what it comes from, all of this stuff, Alf? I think men, there's a large chunk of men who want to submit to other men. And the reward for that is a pat on the back. Well done. they want to submit. I'll call it just men that twerk. You know those guys, like you can imagine them in like pink hot pants just twerking for someone just so they get a pat on the back.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that in boxing.
Oh.
A lot of these guys who talk tough, and you see all the tribal tattoos, all this, but they love twerking. They love twerking for Eddie Hearn. Oh, Eddie, anything you want, man. I got you. Don't worry. And what does Eddie Hearn do? Just there, puppet master, just going, look at all these idiots. Look at what they'll do for me. No wonder I get away with everything. You're just like,
I feel it goes along even, not even so much, you know, Matchroom. I think it goes along with some, like, every promotional thing. They just want to keep people happy. But I think to myself, goodness me. And do you know the thing about it is, though, Terry? They'll fall out of them over something. And then, do you know what I mean? Like, it's all for nothing. They'll have a fall out. And then it'll be a hatchet job on them, like so. Yeah. You know, it's a lot. It's a lot of crap and all that. Especially people, you know, like sticking up for, you know, and trying to do a PR job for promotional companies as well. You're not gaining nothing out of it. So what do you care? Why are you going out? That's their business. Is their business. Their business with that person is their business. Nothing to do with you. Why are you interjecting? And most of them don't even get asked their opinions. They just flatten it off, and it's just, but. You know that you know the certain people in the boxing, and you know everyone knows and sees.
I genuinely believe this. If you took our top promoters in this country and pulled their trousers down, there would be men who would put their hand up to, I'll stop them. they would beg to do it.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't have to force them. Like you could put the gun to the side. Like no. They'd be like, I'll just do it because it's who I am.
Well, listen. If like you say. Some of these people, they're blaggers, and if that's their way of doing right by their fighter and losing their dignity, then fine, do that, you know. But, you know, I believe what we're doing is absolutely fine. We work with our fighters, and we don't have to sell our souls to get our fighters a good deal, and that's exactly what we're doing, you know. We've got a bit of integrity about us, I think, but shame that most... It's not saying most, but shame some people, especially high-end, you know, managers and whatever, can't do the same. But I suppose that's the world we live in.
So where do you see yourself in 3 years, mate?
I would love to see myself with a couple of world champions, that's it. Because, I mean, the core group that we got now, Terry, you know, Masood Abdullah, James Hennigan, Casey Kademi, you know, we signed all them from... debut. I mean, Casey, not so much, but we signed all them from debut. So, you know, we've been doing a great job. You know, young Jack McGann, I know he came up short, got caught cold last time, but the job we've done for him is fantastic. You know, Masood, we've done that. And all these guys have signed contracts extensions of us. So that just goes to show, you know, what we're doing is right. But yeah, in 3 years' time, I'd definitely love to have a couple of world champions. I'd love to, you know, add to our stable quality of fighters and, you know, champions at all level, world, British, European, Southern area, all of them. I'd just love a stable full of champions. We're going on the right path for it.
And then here's a question I've got before we actually talk about some of the current affairs in boxing. Have you ever got that emotional lag? And I talk to people in boxing about this, and it's when you build up a real relationship with someone and they leave you, right? And you're like, and in your head, you don't say public, but in your head you're like, but after everything I did for you, you could just walk away like that. And then you've almost got this thing of, because you'd had so much in your head, like, this is all the stuff I had planned for us to do. And you just, and like, I don't think people in boxing understand this. Like, there's this real period where it's not anger and it's not upset and it's not hurt, but it's this kind of like weird emotional fog where you're like, I can't believe that's all done now.
You just think you put so much of your life into it and your time. I think that's what it is more than anything. And, you know, for it not to be appreciated and all that. But listen, you see it in so many sports now at the higher level. Once you get to that higher level, no one wanted to know you then when you was fighting on undercards, not on TV, on small halls and all that. Once you get a bit of recognition. But, you know, the fighters have got to have that in them where they just go, do you know what, where were you lot before? And all that. You call yourself big boxing people. None of you lot mentioned me. None of you ever. I never see you at a York Hall show. I never see that. So, what, you know, what's going on? They're purely for their own financial gain and all that. And listen, we're here for financial gain as well. We're not doing it for free and all that. But, you know, we never take advantage, especially with what the fighters pay us as well, which I think is a good selling point to our management company as well, because, you know, we don't have, at half fee is one of the lowest, definitely in professional boxing, without a shadow of a doubt. And to be honest with you, it could happen in the future. I don't think I've ever experienced it that much, to be honest with you, Terry. Anyway, and if I have experienced a fighter going, and I can't remember having that feeling. Obviously, I didn't have that emotional connection with them. But I hope it doesn't happen. But it's boxing, yeah. So it is going to happen.
Yeah.
It is going to happen down the road.
100%. Right.
Yeah.
Let's slide into some of the current affairs, because people love all this, because they already know my views on stuff, so they don't really care. You saw the fight on Sunday, right? Fraser against Fabio. What did you make of that?
It was a good fight for the level it was at, and that's exactly what it was. It was a war. It was a war, but it wasn't. You know, it was a good British, solid British title fight. I think, bit over the top. I think people saying it's one of the best fights they've seen on these shores of all time. It was good. It was brilliant. But I think people are just getting a bit ahead of themselves. Maybe they were saying that after the fight because, you know, you're lost in the moment and all that sort of stuff. But for what it was a good, solid fight. It was good. Do you know what? I actually enjoyed the card. I thought they put a great event on Boxer that night. The fight was what it was. It was just, I think, especially after like six rounds, it was just pure guts and thinking. That was just fighting on instinct and all that sort of stuff. I don't think it was pretty at times, but, you know, it was what it was. It was a good, solid fight, but not one of the best of all time.
Because the way I described it was, it was like one of those fights from the early 80s, wasn't it? Like, yeah. You know, where you get like a Mike Weaver against, I don't know, Tony Tubbs or...
Yeah.
It was one of those, wasn't it? Where it'd be a 15-rounder and you're watching it going, I don't know if these men will be the same afterwards.
No, that's right. And I absolutely think, especially that fight, I think that probably took a little bit out of them, especially being the age that Fraser is now as well. And Fabio, you know, I just think... I don't know. I don't think they will be the same after that. But run it straight back. What are you waiting for? Run it straight back.
So as a manager, you'd run it straight back. You wouldn't say.
Not straight back. I think they need a long rest after that, though. Like, I think they really, really do. But do you know what? Why not? I mean, what are you waiting for? Listen, that's the level. That's the level that you want to go beyond. So that's your unfinished business. Go and do it. You're going to get paid handsomely for it. Honestly, if I'm the manager of either of those fighters, I'm thinking to myself, you can beat this guy. This ain't like he could beat you. You can beat him. There was nothing between them, really. You can go in there and beat him. Why not? Roll the dice on it. Roll the dice on it. I don't understand why you wouldn't. I think I'm confident that I would actually put my fighter back in there. Not straight away. But I think they need a long rest after that. But I think both their next fights should be that.
Because I took the opposite view where I said I'd keep them away from each other for a while.
Mm.
And the reason I do that is I don't believe they would fight that way again. And I think the second fight would actually be a massive disappointment.
Maybe so.
Yeah. You almost want to have them have a couple of wins each, get complacent again, get cocky again, and then go, right, let's fight.
The thing is, though, Terry, who do you put them in with up? Who do you put them in? What caliber of fight would you put them in with? To why they wait to fight each other?
Because so I think you can put like I pulled out the names like Michael Hunter. You know names.
Yeah.
Because look, if you look at Fraser, yes, he's 19 stone, but he doesn't bang like he's 19 stone. Yeah. So he needs to fight smaller guys, right? Fabio's shown that he's all right against people his own size, but he doesn't want someone too crafty.
Yeah.
So you start matching accordingly. Like you could put Fabio Wardley in with F.A. Ajagba, and I think he's competitive in that fight.
Yeah, that
would build his name again.
Yeah.
And then you could put Frazier in with Michael Hunter, and we'd all understand Michael Hunter because of the Martin Bacoli thing. There are a couple of good fights where you cement yourself as not at that top, not at the Saudi table, as we call it, but you're kind of underneath there.
Yeah.
And then you go, right, now you two fight. And you might get the call from Turkey.
Yeah. Well, listen, especially on the heavyweight scene, that's what they're waiting for. Yeah, aren't they? Yeah. Everyone's waiting for that call and all that. But, I mean...
Do you think that's killing the sport?
What's that?
Do you think that's killing the sport?
What, with the waiting? No, I think... Do you know what? To be honest with you, with that Saudi... with the Saudi call up, I think... I actually do think that it's a benefit, because I think that people are just going to start perform. They're going, right, I've got them watching me now. I need to up my game. I need to be better, because if I'm... Listen, they're picking the top quality fighters. An example of that, and he took a shine to him, Turkey had a shake, is Mark Chamberlain. You know, he's fought out of his skin and he's fighting over there a second time. I think that it will make people up their game with the thing. In regards to, you know, is it killing it over here? I don't think. Listen, he's going over there, but I don't think so. I think that you're going to see more domestic clashes now, because you know the promoters have got to deliver these fights now for the British public. So all these other fighters, like the British title fight. Things I want to put him in with him. I think you're going to see some interesting matchups over here as well. But I mean, the big boys, it's the same. Listen, it is the same. I know people keep going on about it, but you get to that certain level. Tyson Fury fought over here, done that, and he went over to Vegas for his first few fights and all that, because that's what the money was and that's why they wanted him over there. So, you know, I think it'll be I think that it is beneficial to the sport, the Saudi Arabian money. And as a manager, I want my fighters over there as well. I do. I want them fighting over there. I want them fighting on the big stages. And I want the most eyeballs on them possible. And at the moment, that's what Saudi are doing.
It's occurred to me, you've actually been out there. What is it like when you get out there?
Oh, yeah, I went out there with Jack McGann.
Twice, right?
No, I didn't go out there the second time. Jack was obviously fought out there, and I went over there October. Do you know what? The hospitality they show you over there is madness. You actually, you know, if I don't know what it is like with all the other people that go out there that are not involved in the boxing, but you land on that airplane and you're with the team, and you know you actually got like the rock star treatment over there, and they can't do enough for you over there, and all that. And it is. It's quite a nice place to visit. Some nice places down in there and all that. And you know, it's a different culture over there, and it's interesting to see. I think it's just the same as going to any other country and seeing what they're like. It's just it's good. I mean, the production over there and everything what they put on over there was fantastic. And it's not a bad fight. I mean, there was saying a lack of atmosphere. As well, I've seen that on the telly. But I remember when Jack was fighting over there, and it was in the little small arena before you went to the big arena, and it was like mostly locals around there. But even the shots were that, I don't know what it sounded like on telly because I never watched it. But even the shots, like where they catch your arm and all that, even the crowd are going whoa, and you can hear the noise in there like that, like even the meaningful things and all that. So I think it sounded a bit more different than, because when people went over there, especially with Fury and Ngannou, when I went over there, when Fury got knocked down, the place went nuts. But the people saying on the telly, lack of atmosphere, I don't think it was that bad over there. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't like a packed out O2 or a packed out Wembley Arena where everyone's just screaming, singing along and all that, nothing like that. I don't think it's as bad as what people are portraying it, but obviously you must be seeing something different on telly than you actually got to be there, I suppose. So.
But I said to a mate, I said, there's also a lack of cocaine in Saudi Arabia. So that could influence...
Do you know what? That's what I'm saying. But do you know what? That's a good thing, because I'll tell you what, I didn't see many fights in the crowd. And do you know what? I hate that. It just spoils it, because you know what it's like. The average boxing fan watches it.
Being a bit cheeky, you're a Warren. You know how it used to be until...
It's madness, like... on some of the shows and all that, and you just get complete fucking idiots. And some of them, not even boxing fans, You know, you'd never see some of these going to a local amateur show or a local Your Call show. No, it's just, oh, there's a big fight. What was it? Clark and Waldley and all that. I don't know what I'm looking at, but everyone's going, so I've got to go.
Mate, Carlin Cocaine Kickoff. That's pretty much it.
Well, do you know what? That's what that drug does to you. It makes you think that you can take the world on.
I'm going to ask you this one. Yeah, managers head on. What do you make of that Dalton Smith, Adam Azim thing?
Well, it's been ordered by the board. To be honest with you, I think that they should have pulled him out of the purse a bit early. But let's not. Listen, to be honest with you, it's smart what Eddie's doing, PR wise and all that. But would I put Adam Azim in with Dalton Smith? I think he got pushed on a bit. He should never have fought for that European title. First of all, Adam Azim. He should never. He's been brought along very fast. But he has got the talent to go all the way and all that. You know what? He's a live dog in the Dalton Smith fight. Don't get me wrong. He is. But he just hasn't had the fights and the experience with it. Harlem Eubank fight, I think it's a tough fight for him, especially at his stage of the career. But I think that's what's happened. He's been thrusted into the spotlight. And it's the same thing. Say if you won a European title. Now you can't go back on that level. That's the thing. If you go backwards, you know, you can only go forwards. I just think he was just pushed on a little bit too thing. I don't think it's the right time for that, Adam Azim. But then, do you know what? Saying that, I mean, if I was managing Adam Azim, probably not.
So, but what's the process there, right? Because we don't know who's managing Adam Azim, really, do we?
The McGuigan's, mate, I think.
You never know. I don't ask too many questions about that one.
Yeah.
But there's a promoter talking, but if I'm a manager, I'm like, no, what do you mean fight Dalton Smith? Why now?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing as well. That's why I feel a bit sorry for Ben Shalom as well, because ultimately, it ain't just the promoter's choice. It is the manager's choice. That's why that's why you've got a manager. I'm sure Adam Azim want to fight Dalton Smith tomorrow. Absolutely. I think he fancies his chances against that. But, you know, listen, Shane and Barry McGuigan are going to know their fighter. You know, they're with him day in, day out. So they're going to know their fighter more, even better than what Ben Shalom knows him. You know, they're with him every single day. And if they want to pull out of that, I don't know if it's an ego thing, because listen, we had this before, and it could be a promoter's war thing that they don't want that on there. I remember we had it before, Terry Flanagan, Anthony Crawler. How did we never see that fight? But the only offer that was going in to make that fight was from Queensbury, because I see it firsthand. They were the ones making the offers. Not once did Matchroom ever make Queensbury an offer for Anthony Crawler to fight. I remember they was going to do the sealed bid things and all that. Who's going to get the fight? That was a whole concept for it. It might just be a warring thing with the promoters. I don't know. But I think the putting out of the purse bid things quite too often is just give the fans, you know, a loaded gun to start on you and all that. But, you know, with Ben Shalom and all that, he's young. He's been thrusted into the big time and all that, and he's learning. I don't think he's doing a terrible job. But you know, I've got, what should I say, Matchroom, Eddie Earn and all that. They're great at PR.
Yeah.
They're great. You know, they're great talkers, and you know, they're doing a hatchet job on them at the moment.
Yeah, they're really. And I feel for him because Hearn did the thing. Was it yesterday or the day before? Where he starts listing all the fights that haven't happened.
Mm.
And I'm like, it's always where the Matchroom guy's got more experience.
Yeah.
It's never where the Matchroom guy's the underdog.
I think the one thing I think Ben did say, which I did agree with the other day, is why wouldn't you want to fight Adam Azim right now? I thought, absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, you can tell Dalton Smith's more at his peak than what Adam Azim is, really. And everyone keeps mentioning about George Groves and DeGal. It's not the same at all. They was absolutely parallel careers, George Groves. So when they got to the British title fight, they were parallel careers. That's what it is. But I think that the thing that's really messed them up is he should never have fought for the European title, because once he'd done that and they give the free rein for, you know, as soon as he won that European title, you know for a fact that Matchroom and Dalton Smith's manager is on the phone to that EBU, make him manager. And listen, that's what I'll do. I have to do it with the Commonwealth, to do it with all the world titles. That is your job. You get your fighter to get in that position. So as soon as he won that, you knew that that's what was going to do. And you put your case forward to the EBU.
going, this is going to be the bigger fight, bang, bang. They want their title in the prestigious nights. They want their title seen on the big shows and everything. So, you know, they've done what they're about to do. But, yeah, definitely I think that he's been pushed a little bit too far now, and now they've got to rein it in. And, you know, listen, Adam, get on with what you got to do. Everyone forget about this soon anyway. Just get on with it.
The fight will happen.
Of course it'll happen.
It's like with Fraser Clark and Wardley, right?
Yeah.
Are we glad we waited the extra few months? Probably.
Probably. I think so. Because honestly, I honestly think if they would have fought at that time, I think Fabio, especially the momentum Fabio had, I think he would have blasted Fraser Clark out of there. Yeah. So maybe that was a good job on their part. It's hard when they order it, though, because someone's got to back down. And unfortunately, you know, if your fighter ain't got the experience and all that, you've got to do a job and all that. But
I've said it before. Ben's got to have a plan now, not to go after Matchroom, just to go after Eddie. He's got to have his little chess pieces in place, right?
Yeah.
And then he can start putting pressure on Eddie. Because you want to see him do interviews where he goes, look, we've made an offer to Matchroom. They've gone very quiet.
Yeah.
The money's here. Once he starts putting that pressure, and then, you know, that's when you start to see Eddie start squirming.
Yeah. Well, they all do. Listen, I'm not being funny. You get so many, like, not just promoters, everyone. They all act tough on YouTube. I've seen it firsthand. They act tough on YouTube. You see them in person. They're completely different. It's all a persona. It's all an act. It's all bullshit at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Especially with that. But, you know, they've created an audience now, loads of people, especially the YouTubers, have created an audience where people buy into it and all that and think that people are what they are, what they're not, you know.
You just don't want to bump into the wrong people.
Well, that's it. That's what I'm saying. Listen, keep your mouth shut and all that. And if you've got something to say, and that's what I always say. Loads of people, especially in boxing, you know. I would have loved to, the character, because I remember... Know some of them. It's been my old man telling me as well. Some of the characters in the boxing in the 90s, that's when I would have loved to have worked in boxing, because that was when it was like proper. I mean, some of the guys, you know, work in boxing now, I'm thinking they just don't suit. It don't suit. I don't know what it is, but maybe the landscape's changing the sport and all that. And
Like everything, it just becomes gentrified, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
You're showing up in Dolce & Gabbana. It's not like it used to be.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, God. And that, do you know what?
I don't want to be that person.
And I'll just see it. I mean, even the presenters, like, on the TNT, I used to love that in the 90s. Everyone's suiting a booty, tied up, doing all that sort of stuff. Come on, listen. You're supposed to be taking, you know, takes pride. Now, people like, live on big fights on Sky Sports wearing tracksuits. I'm like, it's just no class about it.
But also, I keep saying that the average age of boxing fans goes up every year.
Yeah.
Putting kids on doesn't really help your audience.
No.
You know what I mean? That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly that.
But just conscious that you've got domestic duties to attend to pretty much now, mate. Anything you need to get off your chest to share with the world?
Nothing. Listen, Terry, I'm very, very pleased finally had the meet to come on the podcast. I'm a big fan of your podcast. I've always said that about the podcast.
Make sure Frank listens. Make sure Uncle Frank.
Oh, listen, I'm sure they listen. The thing I love about this as well, you know, it's a balanced view. Listen, some of the things I don't agree with what you say, but I'll tell you what, I respect the things you say and all that. But it's not, you know, I see some of these YouTube channels and it kills them to give credit to other things, you know. If someone does something right, you'll give credit to them, and that's it. It kills them, and they'll find holes in everything and all that. And that's what I've always said. I love listening to your podcast, and you give a balanced view. And you know what? You're doing absolutely really well, Terry. You should be proud of what you're doing here, mate.
Do you know what? Being honest, just trying, and you'll know this because in your game it's similar. You always see what other people are doing, and it takes a lot of discipline to block it out.
Yeah.
And go.
That's what you got to do.
I've got my mission.
Yes.
Yeah, and every day I've just got to get better at my mission.
Exactly.
And then it happens. But one of the other thing you learn as well doing this is it's never a straight line up.
No, it's not.
Like, man, I get months and I look at the numbers. I'm like, fuck, we ain't going nowhere. We ain't going
exactly.
nowhere. And then it will just kick on. And I'm like, how?
Yeah.
And you just realize that actually life is about doing loads and loads of stuff that doesn't get credit.
Mm.
And then, bang, it all comes together at one moment and you just find another level.
Listen, it's the same with that. I could have a bunch of fighters. You know, I'll go on a losing streak. Some of my fighters, you think, oh, goodness me. You love it when it's going high, but do you know what? You have to have the lows to appreciate the highs. And that's a saying that I've always stood by and all that. And listen, I'm on a similar path to you as well, Terry, you know what I mean? Especially, I'm not a baby at the game. I've been working behind the scenes for the thingy, but as far as management goes, you know, especially my fighters, we're just growing exactly the same. So, you know.
That's all you want.
That's it.
That's it. And, you know, I mean, this will keep going.
Just keep away from morons.
that's
easier said than done.
There you go. And on that note, let's step up. Mate, thank you so much.
Terry,
mate, appreciate pleasure, that. Mate. No one's going to see the handshake, but there was a handshake. Oh, brilliant. Thank Top you, Alf, mate. Yeah.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that, because I did. I thought it was a fascinating conversation. The 80 or 90 minutes flew by. I know I was uncomfortable with just being sat on the floor. I'm not built for sitting on the floor anymore. And so you'll hear the microphone shift a few times in that interview, just having to cope with the discomfort. Now, we're not evolved to sit on the floor anymore, unfortunately. But now, really grateful to Alpha for being a sport. I could see there was a point when I was like, he just wants this done because it's uncomfortable. So we got what we needed to get out of the episode, and then we kind of just had to wrap it up just for our own physical safety and health. But I thoroughly enjoyed that. It's given me the urge to do a bit more of that, just being outside. You never know, man. I might eventually get that Spider Richards interview. We'll see. But no, really enjoyed that. Grateful to everyone that helped. Now, thanks to Amy and Newman, Rival Boxing Gym. Like I said at the beginning, it's definitely worth a stopover. If you're anywhere near the Cali Road and you want somewhere to train boxing, just pop down. Good people, friendly vibe, really, really nice. And if that's going to be the base of operations for Stevie Broughton's team, for example, then I mean, you're going to be around a lot of really good people and, I mean, some good trainers there as well. So, yeah, make the most of that opportunity and, you know, let me know what you guys think. I mean, as always, let's keep the conversation going. If you like the content, share it. Let's bring people in. The one thing I did want to say, if you ask me what I took away from that interview, like my headline in my head was, even if you're a Warren, boxing's a hard, hard game. Like, you know, you've got the right name, but you've still got to do all the other stuff everyone has to do. You still have to go through the same pain. Boxing is just a hard game. That's the conclusion we all draw here. Boxing is just a hard, hard game to get right. And so when people get it right, we should congratulate them. And, you know, when they get it wrong, we should be honest, but we should also learn from it. And on that note, I'll say take care, guys, and I hope you enjoyed this episode.